Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. Here I'm joined by an interesting soul for snacks and sometimes full-blown banquets. We share conversation and confessions, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Hello, my loves. I love this time of year. Still light and bright, but cooling off a bit, maybe. We're celebrating that today with an episode with someone who's probably made me laugh out loud more frequently than anyone other than my partner and kid this year. It's Instagram and more recently Edinburgh Fringe sensation, Laura Ramoso. You know her. She does the impressions of her German mum and Italian dad, and they're beautiful. First of all, though, I want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. I say it every episode, but I am thankful to you for fucking listening. All right? Thank you. And a big, giant, mega thanks, quite specifically, first of all, to my patrons who've been helping me for years. I don't think I thank them, you specifically, often enough. You have been through thick and thin with us, and I wanted to say also a juicy welcome to my new one patron this month. Thank you so much. Hello. Patron is how this podcast funds its guests, if you've never heard of it. It's how the podcast funds its guests, its production, its everything. And without it, we don't get to make the podcast. So if you have anything spare from as tiny as £2 a month, do please go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. My patrons get mountains from personalised birthday videos to early and ad-free episodes to exclusive content, discount tickets to live shows, and more and more and more and more. Enough of that. If that's not in your list of possible things just now financially, that's fine. You'd still be doing me a mega favour if you just shared your love of the podcast into people's faces or DMs, or even just by giving us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. I have got some news. I'm going on tour. I'm in the middle of writing a whole new show, a stand-up show. This tour is going to start in February 2024. The show is called Metal because it's about digging in a bit, about giving a fuck, about trying for the love of trying itself at things. Come, will you come? Please come. Tickets are going to be released in early October, so not long now. And I'm in the middle of getting a brand new website set up. And the bit that's already done is my first mailing list. I've got a mailing list. I know, about fucking time. But I finally sorted that out. I want you to join it because you're my favourites if you listen to this. And that means that you'll be the first ones getting access to all sorts of stuff, including, most pertinently, I will put it out on my mailing list before putting it anywhere else when my tour tickets go on sale. For now, I think the best thing to do is, there'll be a link in the podcast notes, but you can also, if you go to my Instagram at Jessica Foster Q, in the bio is a link there to joining my brand new mailing list. Please can we do that? I hope you're also following at the Hoovering Pod, the podcast social media, because that's where we will be putting out and are always putting out questions to you. And some of your answers get read out during these episodes. There's some amazing ones coming up today, as you're about to hear. Anyway, enough of this. Blah, 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 blah. Let's have this brilliant, funny episode, shall we? I have to say, we snuck this in flipping last minute. So Laura came over to the UK this year to do her show at the Edinburgh Fringe. Edinburgh went so well that it's transferred to a huge run at the Soho Theatre. And she had a bit of time in Europe in between there. And she is a busy, in-demand star. So we have turned this around fast. Producer Laura has done an incredible job. And this was recorded just days ago. And Laura and I were both in London, but she was tits deep in press calls all day. So we recorded this remotely for her sanity. But I, like she would be later that evening, was recording this at the Soho Theatre. I have done lots of Edinburgh festivals, and it's a long old month, isn't it? And I had the opposite of FOMO about being there this year, which I was taught is called JOMO, which is joy of missing out. And the only reason, just I'm disgustingly honest about how sort of stressful things like festivals are for comedians, as fun as they are for audiences. Please keep going, audiences. But the only reason I wished I was there was to see your show. So I can't tell you how flipping chuffed I am, not only to be come and see you in London, but to have nabbed a ticket, because it's flipping rammed, taking over the world. I love it.
Oh, that's very kind.
So welcome to London. And Sorry about it. Sorry about the weather. Sorry about the stress. Sorry about the carnage. Smells of piss, doesn't it? But it's lovely to have you here. And please stay and come back. So normally on this podcast, we would eat something together, virtually or in person. And we're not doing that because we're squeezing it in because you're a busy lady. So I don't know whether to tell you what I was planning to eat if we'd met together. Shall I go through that?
Yeah, please tell me.
Or should we do? We could just do a thing where we say what we wish we were eating. I have got a coffee and a cake here, and I do wish I'm going to eat that, but that's not. Oh, what's this?
I've got crackers.
Ooh, but they look snazzy.
They are. They're sesame and poppy seed. I mean, I really shelled out. I'm nice. Spending money this.
And what's
this trip.
The name? They're called. I can't say.
Scrocchi.
Say it again.
Scrocchi.
Shall I try?
Yeah,
am I going to sound racist if I try?
No.
I am. Okay. I'm good. Scrocchi.
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
You are being too kind. You are being kind. I had asked, because I think I did some, because when we were originally going to talk, you were going to be in Italy, so I did a pretty kind of vague thing of saying, let's just eat something really Italian. And I asked a friend, an Italian friend, what I should make. And she, I think, went a bit off the beaten track and said, I had planned to make a dish that was, it's just called potatoes, pasta, cheese.
Potatoes, pasta, cheese?
Yeah, but in Italian. It was those things, but it was also with like a base that had like onions and carrots and stuff like that. And the cheese was a cheese called provola. I had to go and get it from a deli. And it was flipping delicious.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm sad to have missed out on that. I haven't had that dish. Is it oven baked?
No. Pot stewed.
Pot stewed.
It's that. It's
And it's interesting. Do you know what part of Italy your friend is from?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I just know her name's Caterina, and I just blindly believed everything she
told
me.
Yeah.
She sent me one recipe and then was like, this is in Italian. Can you cope? And I was like, no. Obviously not. So she sent me another one that was in English, but then she was like, actually, I disagree with this. And then the recipe started coming thick and fast, and I got really baffled. I think there's a lot of argument even over how to make something just called pasta, potatoes, cheese.
100%.
I know a lot of people that wouldn't allow themselves pasta with potatoes.
Oh, that's a shame.
And they're losers.
Yeah.
Please may you tell us something that you would have potentially had, given the brief. Can you eat something really Italian?
Oh, yeah. I think a classic lunchtime spaghetti con pomodoro, a ragù. So just a tomato sauce. Very simple. Very
amazing.
Country, casual, countryside dish. Very simple.
Yeah.
But delicious.
Country Casual sounds
country
like
casual.
The name of a magazine that I aspire to subscribe to by my 50s.
Call me by your country casual.
Call me by your country casual. And even I, in my basic bitch level of really only speaking English and the tiniest dabblings of French, can work out what con pomodoro means.
Mm.
And I've heard of spaghetti. I've heard of spaghetti. Mm. I can work it out. Oh, but you've got connections to so many places.
Yeah, I had a pretty interesting upbringing.
Right, let's get straight into this with a particular angle, please, on eating.
Okay, so you have to know, as one thing that kind of sits on top of my entire upbringing, is that my dad's Italian, right? And my mom worked, and he was a stay-at-home dad. He did freelance work occasionally, but was picking me up from school, he's cooking every day, lunch and dinner. And everywhere we went, everywhere we lived, he would always cook for us, mainly Italian food. So that's kind of sort of the undercurrent of my upbringing as well. And there was always a home cooked Italian food wherever we lived. Very, very cool. So I was born in Italy to an Italian dad and a German mom. And because of the work my mother did, she worked for the World Health Organization, we moved around a lot. So we would spend the summers and Christmases, went back to Italy. But the other time of the year, we did 6 years in Cameroon, 3 years in Azerbaijan, 5 years in China, and then 3 years in Vietnam. And then I moved to Canada for university. That was my upbringing, with food in mind, again, Italian undercurrent, but obviously eating the local food as well. And I miss China a lot for that. It's probably one of the best ones.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Did your dad still try and cook Italian food in China?
Yeah, at home. Yes, yeah, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Do you like cooking or care about it? Some people take great joy, and some people, understandably, for some people, it's about function, and it's not like something where there's like emotions and I don't know. It's not any more complicated than something that it's just providing fuel.
Yeah, I take joy in eating. I take joy in cooking sometimes. I have to really be in the mood. I didn't fully get my dad's love of needing to cook every meal. He hates leftovers. He cooks every meal, every day, new lunch and dinner. I do that sometimes, but admittedly, I also eat out way more and don't cook as complicated dishes as he does. So I love to cook when I love to cook, and then other times I'm lazy too.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
Yeah.
That sounds very balanced and healthy. I eat out way more than sits right with me. Like, I feel like it's where the vast majority of my spare money goes on. Like, I've got nothing to show for it other than a sort of a full soul and belly.
Well,
like,
that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess there's less stuff in the world if I don't have any art.
Where do
objects.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? But I also think it's part of being a comedian is we are. It's a transient existence,
yes, and absolutely.
You if you're working of an evening, you have an excuse to,
of course,
be kind of out and yeah.
Where do you like to eat out? What do you go for?
Oh, it really varies.
Yeah.
Like, so let's talk about just on Dean Street, where Soho Theatre is, where you're doing your show. I've been recording something here all day, and I think it's really interesting I associate this street, well, maybe at the moment you do too, with walking towards a place but in a nervous way about to go and perform. But this particular road is like so rammed with restaurants either have eaten in too nervously to enjoy or too late to not be like so ravenous that I've got time to taste anything.
Yeah.
I'm overwhelmed just on this street alone. I think it's like a really good example of central London, and it's kind of chaos in that sense. I don't know if Canada is like that at all, but there's a place called Tonkotsu, a ramen place on that is meant to be amazing that I've never been to. Mm-hmm. I love stuff like that. There's a couple of chain places I love. There's a Rose's Thai. Yum, yum, yum. Get in my face. I'd eat Thai food for breakfast. I love Thai food very much. Yum. There's like a takeaway sushi place called Wasabi that is a massive chain. They're probably completely corporate sucker of Satan's dick, but I love. The point is, it's yummy for me. What else? Yeah, I think there's quite a hefty list. There's also, I mean, you've got everything on this road. There's a
big old supermarket where you can get kind of short, quick, cold things. That's, yeah. What about you? Have you like a favorite nationality of cuisine?
Again, I also love a lot of different types of food. In answering the question, not that you asked this question, but I've asked this question to a lot of people, is what cuisine would you, if you had to pick one to eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the rest of your life, what would you choose? I'll let you answer first, and then I'll tell you my answer. So what would you, what do you think? Would it be Thai, or just think every single day?
In this moment, I'm saying Mexican.
Got a lot of different flavors.
I think it's an underlier for a UK palate. I know one or two amazing places, but I think it's got like the things I crave in winter and the things I crave in summer and the things I crave when I am hormonal and the things I crave when I am like looking for celebration times and the things I want for brekkie and the things, like, it's got a bit of all of those things. Like, there's so much lime and herbs, but also big beans and fried fish in a roly thing and a spicy tomato juice. I had a thing recently in a Mexican restaurant I didn't know existed that was, and I've forgotten the name of it. It's basically beer and Bloody Mary together.
That's
changed my life. How about you?
Well, not to sound too boring, but I would have to pick Italian, and it's because the Italian cuisine is actually incredibly varied. It isn't, you know, just carbs, pizza, and pasta, but they eat a lot of fish, a lot of delicious vegetables, cheeses, and meats, and I think you can get sort of everything if you want. What a great way to put it. You said there's everything for every emotion, or when you're looking for a celebration or to eat kind of like heavy or light. It's got everything. So I would definitely pick
it up. It's so true. Yeah. Oh, amazing. I think I've only ever lived in the UK, and I think of Italian food as sunshine food, but actually it's a misnomer, isn't it? And I think we have a lot of chat in our media about how the Mediterranean diet, it's very fashionable at the moment. The Mediterranean diet's great for the gut health and, you'll live forever, you know. And then Italian food has, like, it's never turned up anywhere and not been popular.
It's never been like
the cuisine that cropped up in a place and people went, these guys need to go home.
It just is good. Also, not to sound too like, I do really think that the ingredients themselves are also different and of very high quality. You know, just eat just a tomato and you're just like, wow, this tomato is bursting my ass out with flavor. And it's good. I sound like I'm an Italy lover. I am, but you know, not.
You are. There's got to be a word. Is there an Italo? Is it something, a file, isn't it?
Italophile.
You're a Francophile if you love France and Italophile. I mean, we could Google it, but I want to ask you.
We're busy.
How was Edinburgh in terms of eating? I think it's weird, right? Because there's lots of beautiful places to eat up there, but it's sort of so not why you're there. But like you, I love eating out and I love variety. I don't leftovers like your dad, but that's born out of I had an Austrian grandparent who drilled in a very sort of strict hatred of waste.
Yeah.
So I will eat things that are really dangerous because of how much I hate waste. So I'm kind of the opposite of that, but equally, like, I have a very varied life. Like, I like, and during the Edinburgh Festival, I actually kind of, I think because I'm looking for some semblance of stability and routine, I do become a creature of habit. And actually, I'll probably go for somewhere nice to eat in the first three nights and then, or afternoons, and then go every day, if not every other day there, and then make the same. How did you function up there in terms of eating?
Oh, God. I think the Fringe was challenging in many ways, but it was challenging in a way to where I'm sure you relate. My show was at 8:20 every day. And so usually when I'm not doing, well, even when I'm doing a show, but I'm at home, it's so much easier to stick to my normal routine. Yeah. I like to get up pretty early and have a breakfast and a lunch and a snack and a dinner. But the Fringe, I felt like my schedule was absolutely disgusting. I would just just not good.
I wasn't expecting you to go all the way to disgusting, and I really enjoyed that.
And I did. I ended up, because things happen after the show and you want to hang around and you want to meet people, or you're watching a late night show, and then you end up, I don't feel like eating a big dinner before the show. So I typically just snack, do the show, then a big meal after the show. And it was always like a food truck, obviously, because not many things were. I was surprised, actually, that not many places stayed open late.
To actually sit down.
Unless
you want Indian food, there aren't tons of options in Edinburgh for a 10 p.m. dinner.
Yeah. So I ended up having, I can't tell you how many crepes I had from Panquake. Yeah. I made friends with the people who worked there. Shout out to Bella, actually. And and I don't know if this is good to say, but by the end, I was getting free pancakes like every night. I went there too much. I spent too much money there. But that's I'm very proud of that.
I would be smug about that. You got you got like the celeb black card for this pancake place. And I'd be chuffed a bit.
Anyway, it would be, savory pancakes or a chicken wrap or a burger. And it would be 1 a.m., 2 a.m. You go to bed at 3. You wake up at noon because you need enough sleep. And it felt crazy. I wasn't well, I'll tell you that, physically. You just don't feel, I felt like, honestly, some days I felt like all I could manage was doing the show and nothing else.
I think actually expectations of yourself beyond that are a rookie error at the fringe, essentially.
And I know that now.
Now we know. Yeah. That's what you're there to do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of becomes all you can really do.
Yeah.
Gosh, so interesting. But at least there is, I think I did my first fringe in any capacity, like with an improv group in 2000. not a good one. It wasn't a good one. Laura wasn't good.
Yeah.
In 2007, back then, even it was basically chips. It was fish and chip shops that would be open past 9 p.m.
Yeah.
And at least now there are trucks that do whatever, something
you can get
else,
a protein.
Some other stuff. Yeah, you can get a protein. You can't get a tomato that blows your ass out, but
no.
You can get a protein.
Yeah.
Yeah. Understood. So I'm so glad that you got some time in Italy, kind of just to reset
my gut health
in every single way.
My gut biome. Yeah.
Your gut health. Whoa. Oh my gosh.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hoover.
Hey, dear hearts, this is me interrupting my own self to check in with you and your amazing answers to my listener questions. Most recently, I asked you what the most interesting things you'd ever used to eat something with were, and lads, as ever, you didn't disappoint. I'm starting with a short and fucking excellent little voice note from Esme Bumble.
I used a twig to scoop coleslaw into a tiger roll.
Just really funny. That's really funny. Thank you. A twig is so thin. Okay, so I mean, I'm going to say I think this might actually have been the most fruitful question I've asked so far. I can't remember the last time they made me laugh this hard. We had a WhatsApp message from Joelle. Working late in the office, so we were getting dinner on Deliveroo, ordered burrito bowls and cutlery. Burrito, you've made it sound like cutlery is a side there, Joelle. But when it arrived, the orders got mixed up and somebody else took our food. Cunts. And she doesn't write that. That's me. That's my director's commentary. But we ended up with their dishoom. Okay. I mean, to be honest, I'm sorry for swearing about them now, because I think, no offence to your burritos, but you win. They'd ordered a couple of curries and some bhajis, and they hadn't ordered cutlery with it. Couldn't find the person to get the meal swapped back over, so we decided to have the dishoom and find cutlery in the office. But nothing to be found. Ate as much of the curry with the bhajis as we could. That is clever. And then she says, but lots left over. Had to resort to getting paper cups out of the coffee vending machine and cutting them up to fashion a kind of scooper. Very inefficient, very ineffective, but still managed to eat some without getting too messy. Joelle, you classy bastard. I'm so impressed at your restraint. I just know if I was properly hungry and knowing how delicious dishoom is, I would 100% have just drunk it. Or tried to suck lick it up or sort of on all fours like a cat straight from the dish. Your sophistication is an inspiration to us all, Joelle. Two more short ones for today. God, these are good. John Ball on Instagram says, watched a rather well-to-do lady eat a hummus thing using the corner of a book. That is very funny. He's also written, looked like such an effort as well. John, I love that woman. I mean, but is it just me, or weren't you desperate to know what the book was? I'd have loved it so deeply to have been a Jeremy Clarkson or some other toxic waste, which finally a woman has found a good use for. Last up, and I'm not saying it's best, but this came from Rosie Cowie, who says, going through security at the airport, someone had emptied their water bottle into one of the plastic bags, then attempted to drink from it. Think that was a first, even for the security guards. Wow, wow, wow. I mean, wow. We all know how I feel about waste, so this has made my heart explode. I remember a friend catching me wrapping up and taking home from a month at the Edinburgh Festival, half an onion, taking that home on a 5-hour train, and I was bullied so hard for that. Well, it turns out I'm not the maddest person after all, actually, because someone, rather than finishing their water from a bottle, is finishing it from the clear bag. What a relief. Thank you for these dreamy answers. New questions coming all the time, so keep these answers coming my way. Head over to @thehooveringpod on Instagram or X or Facebook to see the questions. Let's get back in to this lovely episode with the iconic Laura Ramoso.
Your stuff about your parents is so funny. I'm on a ban in my comedy from talking about my mum. I hope yours never inflict this on you, because your stuff about your parents, especially in relation to eating, is so funny.
Well, thank you. That's great.
I mean, culturally, there is so much joy, deeply relatable stuff in that. Comments, side swipes, passions, obsessions. I feel like you use your version of their takes on eating and relationships with eating really beautifully in your work. Are they fine with that?
Yeah, they are fine with it. When I first started posting parent content with my mom, we had a conversation, because I think at first the character at first was, you know, was taking, and I still do, I mean, take things that she actually says and does and then just exaggerate them. Obviously now over time it's grown. She's grown to become her own character and is still heavily inspired by my real mom, but there is a bigger gap being formed the longer this goes, because I mean the character has to develop in her own comedic way and is obviously very two-dimensional. And my mom is a three-dimensional person. So at first we did have to have a conversation because it was this thing of like, oh, these people are laughing at me. But we actually went through the comments together and you kind of notice that people really love German mom and are on her side. So yeah, it just took a little bit of getting used to, but we're totally good. And they love the characters and they're approving of the things and they always get suggestions and everything. Yeah. It's become fun.
Oh, I love it. Well, well done. I think that early airing is a really lovely thing. I've absolutely fucked up in the past and just sort of vaguely mentioned that they might, you know, something they said once might crop up in it. And then it happened in a show that went better than I expected. And then my mum saw it and was like, and it goes on TV and they're like, my mum did the whole like, oh, well, I actually know. I mean, I never said that. And you're like, well, I didn't make it up, but then I did build around it. And that is, but now I'm just on 100% ban. So bad news for my 7-year-old because he's the only one left. He's the only one left. No, I'm also on a ban. But basically, I need to make more friends. I'm not going to have any material. Oh, okay. What about this? Have you got any location specific foods or things which you believe only taste right or good or best if they're eaten, I guess, not just in a specific place, but maybe sometimes things demand to be eaten in a particular way or time of day or at a certain event or season?
I love to. I think when you have a meal, or when you decide to have something, unless you're like out and about and you really need to just eat, I love to like set it all up and curate the perfect bite every time. So I think, say you're having cheese and crackers, you're having a charcuterie or something. Every single bite should be taken advantage of to the most. It's like you're doing a cracker, you put it on your whatever meat you want, get on some cheese on there and the jam. Like every single bite should be... It's not random. You're not randomly putting it into you have to get all of the flavors together at once. Yeah. It's same with a salad. Every single fork thing has to have a little bit of all of the ingredients so that it all explodes together. I really love that. I loved creating the perfect spoonful. In terms of location specific, sometimes drinking a coffee. I love coffee so much. Mm-hmm. And the morning ritual, drinking a coffee, there's different vibes. Sometimes you want to be productive and you have your coffee with your computer, or sometimes you're just like chilling and you have a coffee looking out of a window. But something that is always the same for me is this has to be my biggest food opinion, I guess, is cold things have to be ice cold and then hot things have to be boiling hot.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah. So coffee, wherever I'm doing, I always get up and reheat it like 10 times every morning. It has to be sip cannot be wasted. It has to be the perfect hot sip every time. That's how I feel. Like curating the perfect.
I'm in awe of this restrained commitment to the flavor. Do you know what I mean? I don't have the patience to do this. Also, I don't know. Am I right in thinking you haven't got kids?
Yeah, I don't have kids.
Yeah, that hot drink thing is gonna, if you ever did, be really, really, that's gonna get really annoying.
I
feel like that was the first 6 months of my son's life was spent next to a microwave, just reheating the same fucking coffee or tea just again and again, just to get, and where my bar was for how hot it needed to be for it to taste. I now, he's nearly eight, I just drink it like tepid. Oh. That's how low I've had to stoop.
I cannot currently handle that reality. Yeah. It's, I need it to be, like, for example, last week I bought individual Activia yogurt cups for the taste, not the pill. And I set up breakfast. I took it out for breakfast and then I had to go do something like hang the laundry or whatever. And I went back to the breakfast and then I put that yogurt cup back into the fridge and took another one out. Not that it had been sitting out. but it just wasn't perfectly fresh out of the fridge.
Oh my God, this is the funnest thing to find out about you. I love it. I really love it. But what about the things... I'm worried this isn't going to be good for your heart health, but how do you feel about iced coffee?
Oh, in the summer, definitely.
Oh, okay, so that is fine. As long as, because it's an iced drink, it's fucking cold.
Yes, but I will always I'll ask for extra ice. And if okay. I'm at home, I've got an opinion about it. If I'm at home, I will keep adding ice to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is there, am I right in thinking there's an Italian opinion about days of the times of the day for coffee?
Yes.
That it's like a kind of frowned upon to have a cappuccino mid-afternoon or after a meal.
Yeah.
In a way that especially me and other elderly members of British society regularly do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I will have a cappuccino after midday. It's like the sticklers will stick to it. But there's definitely there's definitely a cultural rule. And also in larger terms, a cultural sort of schedule and rhythm regarding food in Italy that is have been unmatched in any other place I've ever been. Everyone eats at the same time and has an idea of what
are the times, what are the eating times, and how do you know it's time if you like, is there like a public call to prayer?
I mean,
will you all turn and face away and in one direction and bow to the gods
and bow to the
of the tummy?
Honestly, yeah, like Milan is probably the outlier, and that's why a lot of big cities don't necessarily do this, but it will be the same. It's because the morning time, you know, people wake up early, 7 to 9, you're having breakfast, and then you lunch at 12:30 or 1, because then the restaurants, they close in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And they close between 2 and 4 or 4:30 or 5 even, so it, if you want a sit-down meal, you're going to be eating at specific windows. If you go to somebody's house at 12:30 or 1, know you're going during a lunchtime. So don't either don't or, you know, be expect to be sat and eat together. It's very, you know, I'll eat something at 4 p.m. and they'll be like, what are you doing? You're ruining your appetite for dinner. Very, very scheduled rhythm for eating.
Yeah, I love this. Is an afternoon nap factored in?
Yeah, so definitely. Yeah. Yes. Oh,
incredible.
Yeah, you know, well, children, but you don't go to somebody's house at 3:30 or children told not to make noise or play outside. People are sleeping. It's funny to me. It also tells you a lot about Italian bureaucracy, because they'll have like the joke is that places are open, you know, 9 to 11 every second Wednesday, and there's nobody working there. Lunch 4 hours a day. Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And then, but now I don't know. Like, I think we have nothing left of, I think there was a pattern here where like you had a big hot cook lunch, and most people, like if kids were at school, they would often go to a school they could walk home from, but there would be a parent that didn't work other than as a parent unpaid. And there'd be like a hot meal at lunchtime to come home for my grandparents' generation. Maybe that was the situation, but then it just doesn't leave room for any flexibility for all the different types of life that people have now.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think if I have a gig in the evening, if I'm performing in the evening and I have been up at whatever, childcare o'clock, then I would need some caffeine now, or I will have very little to give. But at 7 p.m. or whenever it is, someone's going to ask me to be funny.
Totally.
So like if I lived somewhere where people would be like, what is she doing?
Yeah.
It would be harder. But I also have a very romanticized reaction to that news, because I just like the idea that people do things together and that people know what's coming and that there's something that someone's put some care and thought into in people's on people's plates at the same time every day. And I like the pace of the sound of it. And I like the culture of the idea of this taking time and tasting things just sounds so fucking healthy and happy and joyful.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. And in fact, I notice a big difference with gut health, because it's not just the stuff you're eating, but you're setting your body up on a rhythm. It's just really great for feeling good.
So I'm a big fan of like intuitive eating, because yeah. learning about that saved me from a lifetime of cyclical, pointless, fatty diets and
yeah.
just bullshit, really toxic, useless shit, really. I think, again, that's much easier to do. Ultimately, if it just boiled down to, like, eating what you want when you want, as in the sense of knowing when you're hungry, knowing when you're full, knowing the yeah. sort of thing you might feel like eating, like, it's not going to be the same any 2 days, but actually... It's really hard, I think, for most people with busy lives to reconnect or to connect for the first time to those, to that intuition, because intuition implies it's easy and innate, and actually it requires some real learning and yeah. trial and error, I think. But if there is a routine in your life and you don't live in chaos and travel and change and carnage, then that reconnection is surely a bit easier than yeah. if you're asking yourself to... be attuned to that stuff through a life where every day is really different one day to the next. So I think there's a lot to be said for it, even though I don't live like that and have no prospect of being able to live like that. I love to hear about it. How do you feel about sharing food?
Oh, I love to share food.
Okay,
yes.
Right. Do you have siblings?
I don't have siblings. I'm an only child.
Oh, well done. Me too. Oh, my God.
No way.
Oh, I love it when we buck the trend. Everyone assumes we're shit sharers, but it's yeah. not true, actually.
No, it's not. We're good sharers. Oh, well, good food sharers, but mm-hmm. I actually bring this up, is I don't like to share chargers.
Okay.
I actually figured this out with my husband recently. Is okay. not a charger sharer. I want my own charger to be where it is when I leave it there. But food, I love food. I love tasting. I love to get, if we're going out, I'm not going to mm-hmm. order the same thing somebody else orders, because we need to try all the different yeah. things. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I think you're seriously missing out. If there's like, I've been in situations where you see like the four other people all get the same thing and you think,
oh, waste. What a waste.
They could all have had a little, we could have all have had a little bit of each other's. Yeah, but that only goes wrong if you're the one who gets the flipping amazing thing, and everyone's like, I have that, and you're like, it's mine.
Yeah, I think that people who don't like to share food, I think that is a red flag. Sorry.
Yes. it's a great, that is a red tent. It's a whole red tent. Oh, this is a new question. And that's caveat. This is a kind way to myself of saying it could be shit. Laura. So feel free to not have an answer, but I want to know, is there a food that you think's the hardest to get into? Either something really hard to unwrap, or a type of food that's hard to peel or crack, but something hard won that you've ever eaten, and was it worth it?
No, I think something that is almost not worth it is bacon at home. Because
oh wow.
I do you have it here where the bacon package is like vacuum sealed, the vacuum sealing the bacon?
I know exactly what you mean. It depends entirely where you've got it from here. Okay. Sometimes one corner has been like, is meant to be liftable, upable.
Right.
And you can just peel the whole lid off. But I'm assuming at home you don't have that corner. So it's
no.
sharp knife.
Sharp knife, scissor. It's like a long, and they're like vacuum sealed, right? So as soon as you open it, you've got, first of all, you've got this bacon grease already on your scissors and already on the side. Then you're supposed to somehow get the air into it and slide these long pieces of greasy, greasy raw bacon out of the thing. My other question for you is, where are you putting your leftover bacon? You can't put it back in the stupid grease, the greasiest package you've ever felt in your life. Then when you cook it, there's grease everywhere. I just think it's almost not worth it. And when everyone's like, bacon's delicious, I think,
especially if you only wanted one piece.
Exactly.
And then you've got like a log of bacon in your fist.
Yes.
You've got to try and find some new vessel for, which inevitably is going to be like probably more plastic, like a zip up bag or a Tupperware. But then I don't know, I feel funny about putting raw meat in Tupperwares.
I know. And are you ever opening that Tupperware again? Are you honestly
I probably am, because of the risks I take for waste.
That's true. That's fair. I just think you have a hankering for bacon once every a year and a half, and then you have it, and then you're like, oh, how am I going to eat this again? I don't think I can.
Yeah.
So I don't think that bacon at home is worth it because of the hassle of getting into the packet and dealing with the packet. It's my hot take.
I've lived and I have learnt. Thank you.
Quick fire questions.
Apart from milk, what was the first thing you ate ever?
Probably a vegetable puree. My mom boiled vegetables and pureed them. And my dad put olive oil on them.
Beautiful. Any vegetable, like just any root vegetable?
Carrots, potatoes.
Amazing.
Zucchini, all of it. Yeah.
Glorious. Yeah. Tell me about something you ate on a plane and how was that?
Recently, almost a lot of airlines are doing these like hot packet breakfasts where it's like in a cardboard box and it's like a sausage roll or vegetable roll. They've always got these intricate patterns on them. And I'm like, spend less time on the pattern and more time on the filling.
Yeah. Spend a bit more time on the bit we'll eat. Please spend some time on the bit that we'll eat rather than see.
Yeah. What are they thinking? Yeah. Somehow my seatmate every time never eats their packet. And I have asked them once if I could have their registered packet.
I'm proud of you for that. And what did they say?
Yes.
They said yes?
Yeah, go for it. I'm like, okay. Well, you don't have to be rude about it.
I can tell exactly how they're like, yep. Oh. And then like their little phone comes out.
Yeah, and they're like,
just filming you eating their discarded hot pocket.
Yeah.
Tell me about any food that you were given as a gift.
Oh, chocolate boxes. That reminds me of the we were at Sainsbury local. Yeah. And we saw something I hadn't seen since I was a child, which was the chocolate shells. Do you know what I'm talking about? And they're like shaped like
Gillians.
Yes. And I hadn't seen that since I was a child. And it just reminded me of being somewhere that wasn't at home, like my parents' friend's house, and being the only child there eating this chocolate shell. So I think those are pretty
lovely. Yeah. If you drink alcohol, hangover, what are you having?
It's got to be something savory. Cheese and bread, like grilled cheese. And I think call it a toasty here. But that would probably...
but we don't do it like you do it in Canada. No. I've learned through my podcast that it's a fried cheese sandwich, right?
Yes, with butter exactly. And like cherry tomatoes on top, cooked. That's probably my favorite. Yeah.
Oh, I think you've covered everything with that answer, and I love to hear it. What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten?
Nerves. You know, in Italy, we have something called nervetti, which are like nerves. Cow nerves, like
cow nerves. Wow.
I mean, just like anything, you just cover it in olive oil, salt, and eat it with a hard cracker or something like that.
What does it look like? Like tendrils?
Exactly.
Like, is it white?
It's kind of pinkish, whitish, and see-through, and kind of glossy.
Oh.
And chewy. And savory.
I had no idea about this.
Yeah.
I've been doing this podcast over 5 years and I've never heard of nerves.
It's definitely like a classic country, like just something you would have on the table to add to your cheeses.
Would you have it on a charcuterie, like with hams and salamis and stuff like that?
You would have it with those things, but it's very casual, like a country casual. I mean, it's not like you wouldn't have it at like a restaurant on a board, but just something to
just some country casual
country
nerves.
Casual nerves.
I love it.
Oh, and come on, black pudding is weird.
Oh, black pudding, that's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
And haggis is weird.
That's weird.
Haggis is so. Haggis I'm is sorry, weird. I didn't enjoy that at all. Haggis.
Did you not?
No, I didn't.
Oh, do you know what? I love the seasoning. I love how peppery it is. But did you try any vegetarian haggis?
I actually had
because
to put this
basically
in my
that way. Oh, really? Well, I'm coming to see it, so maybe it's spoilers. But like, it's one of the many foods that I think, you know, as someone who gives at least a single shit about the planet, like, I don't understand why we need to keep eating the meat version of that.
Fair.
Like, it's things like nuggets and haggis and like things like that where I'm like, you would have no idea that that's what that meat that is, where meat that is, who meat that is. We might as well have a synthesized soy planty version of that if actually what we're interested in is the seasoning.
That's right.
And the texture.
No, it's funny. You brought that up. I have to say this is I had to put this in my show because some jokes get changed based on the location. And there's three girls who just got back from Europe in the show. And then they talk about where we are, like Edinburgh, right? And I had to put the show.
Yeah.
Well, they're making fun of Edinburgh. And they're like, one of them says, you know, oh, veggie haggis is actually better. Veggie haggis is actually better. Because everyone told me that. Everybody said, but
it's
have
me.
You tried veggie haggis?
Yeah, what a wanker. I love it. Now I'm going to feel like I'm in your show. But thank you for giving me the heads up. Otherwise, I'd have thought you'd have changed it to specifically mock me. And I'm happy to be a part of a mocked group.
Now it's time for the Big Ben question.
A monk who's been silent for 70 years explodes, and all his trapped words and feelings create a toxic hell cloud that starts raining screams down on all humanity. It's a maddening apocalypse, but luckily it's agreed to have never happened. But only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, do a 6-month Pilates course, but at triple speed and all in one day with no breaks. And all the while you have to be explaining science to climate change deniers in 50 languages. So your mouth is too busy for snacks. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. You go down in history as a person who saved us all from a hell cloud apocalypse. And your reward is the adulation of all people for all time as a place in history as a kind of demigod. But your reward in the moment, and bearing in mind you're starving from doing all that, and you didn't have any snacks, your reward in the moment is the feast of your dreams. What would you eat? What would you drink? This is very different to a last meal, because you're the happiest and hungriest you've ever been. This is the beginning, not the end.
Oh, wow. What a wonderful way to put it. It has to be a carbonara. Yes. If I had to choose, my dad's carbonara.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes. To drink, I would probably pick a wheat beer, like a Blue Moon or a Weissbier.
Hoegaarden.
Yes. And I would have a bunch of cheeses to choose from and all the crackers in the world. And then I would also, for dessert, then I would have hazelnut gelato and maybe also pavlova on the side.
Yes. Fucking hell. Yes.
Yeah. I'll have an alcoholic drink and then half sparkling water, half cranberry juice with a lime and lots of ice.
Oh, so much ice. Hoovering
Podcast. What a belting episode. Make sure you're, surely you're already following her at LAU_Ramoso on Instagram. She basically owns TikTok as well. I should have mentioned that. Surely you're already following her, but if you are not, you're in for so much laughing treats. Come along with me. I've got tickets to see her live at the Soho Theatre this month. Keeps being thoroughly sold out, but it does look like they keep adding new dates. It's worth keeping your eyes peeled on that. Make sure you are signed up to join my brand new spanking new mailing list to be the first to hear about tickets for my metal tour stand-up show going on sale in October. The tour is from February through to the summer next year. I can't wait. A link to joining that mailing list to find out more about that is in my Instagram bio or in the podcast notes as ever. And I've got a special out on Sky or Now TV or wherever you get your Sky content from. It's called Real Friends. I play a sort of part animated imaginary ice cream in it, and I've only got myself to blame. I wrote it. Yeah, thank you for listening.
Follow us on social media at The Hoovering Pod. I'm on at Jessica Fostercue. Send us voice notes, pictures, WhatsApps to 07462 855 271. Email us, thehooveringpod@gmail.com. I'll be storing all your beautiful offerings up and discussing them in future episodes. Keep an eye on our social media for any specific questions and topics that we'll be asking you to contact us about. Links to everything interesting mentioned today are, as ever, in the podcast notes. Hoovering is presented and created by me, Jessica Fostercue. The music is by Jake Yap, and it was produced by Laura Grimshaw. Until in 2 weeks, happy hoovering.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.